Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. We're in the studio today on yet another cold, wintry Wednesday. Can't wait for this to be over. But in light of that, we are having something today in the studio to talk about something that's my favorite, one of my favorite types of drinks to start thinking about the summertime. Beer! We're talking beer today. And today we have the head bartender, bar manager of Bush & Shank in Brooklyn, New York, Tristan Colgrove. Welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
It's about damn time. We talk a lot about cocktails, wine, and beer on this show, and I'm really excited to be doing this today because right now in front of us we got a couple of beers and we're just going to shoot the shit.
Yeah, man. This Imperial IPA is delicious, by the way.
You're drinking the Green Flash?
Yes, I am. Not the Palate Wrecker, just the normal IPA, the Imperial.
Nice. And I've got the Greenport Harbor Black Duck Porter, which actually one of my old bartenders, Nate DeMoss, who's over at the Shanty in New York Distilling Company, he used to work for them, and that's how I first found out about it, and it's one of the... To me, one of the more, like, drinkable stouts. It's, like, very consistent, kind of chocolatey coffee, you know, it's, like, but not, like, super heavy.
Yeah, they have a lot of the characteristics. You get, like, an imperial stout. There's a lot of coffee on it, but you don't have to deal with the ABV and drinking one or two and obviously not enjoying another one after that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing with beer, man. You like to have, you can't just stop with one. You could do that with cocktails, but with beer, you want to keep drinking. And actually, that's something we were talking a little bit before, both earlier today and earlier in the week, about session beers. And I think, you know, you were saying that that's something that's really... I mean, the first time I ever heard the term session beer was probably about, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And some of my buddies were like, what the hell is this? Because I'm from Oklahoma, yeah, where we have those laws where it's like most of the beer you can get is 3.2% alcohol. Anything over that, you have to get in a liquor store, and it's room temperature. It's not even chilled. So you got to, like...
Wow.
Yeah, it's really bullshit because it's
3.2 isn't really even sessionable at that point, is it?
It's like that's not a session. That's like a long haul.
Yeah, yeah.
to get where you need to be.
Yeah, totally.
But we always talk shit about it because, like, I mean, it's... And it needs to be talked shit about because, you know, it's like... The whole thinking behind that is like, oh, well, you're going to have these stronger beers that you have to buy at a liquor store, and they're going to be room temp. And the whole idea of that is so you won't get in your car and drink them. But wait a minute, I don't need to have my whiskey chilled that's on the shelf next to
it.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I'm not going to drink that fifth of whiskey in the six-pack of Imperial IPA I bought on the car ride home.
Yeah, I'm going to drink fifth of whiskey like while I'm waiting for my beer to chill. You know,
yeah,
it's totally so backwards, man.
Yeah, they're really making a big push, though, with IPAs being sessionable. I mean, it's been a very very big, very trendy style in the last 5 years. As you know, Americans love to overhop everything. We love the hoppy flavor. We like the big ABV that comes along with it. But there's a lot of drinkers that necessarily don't want to have 3-4 beers and be drunk, and that's why they're making a big push with this 5-4.5% session IPA, and it's going to be huge. I mean, Founders, all the big breweries have done it. Founders just put out their all-day IPA. It's super overhopped, super dry hopped on the front, so the nose smells strong like an imperial, but then you taste it and you're like, well, I could drink this. I could drink a 30
actually,
pack.
You, like, hang out with it.
Drink a 30 pack of this if they actually made it in a 30 pack.
Oh, man, I miss 30 packs. Oh, that was a challenge that was accepted a few times. Yeah. I don't know if it was ever fulfilled back in the day.
we don't have the luxury of that in New York.
Yep. Yeah, come down to Oklahoma and we'll crush some 30 packs, man. Yeah. And then, you know, we'll stack up the cans and, you know, shoot them with their BB guns and just have a good old Oklahoma time.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, so, like, session beers, like, typically, what is the ABV on them?
Sessionable beer usually is under 5.5%. I would say even lower. And it goes range anywhere down to 4%. The beer is just made to basically have to be able to drink all day. You want to be able to drink it. You want to be able to have, you know, 10 beers and not be drunk. And that's what that's what you're going for. Usually, like a lot of lagers, you know, we have a session we carry at Mini Bar, which is super popular, which is named exactly after that. They're starting to get some of the ales. They're starting to lighting up, and they're doing really cool thing with the hops. They can accent the flavor. They can get the basically they're fooling you. Like it's all there. You're drinking a 7.5% beer, but you're not.
Yeah.
You know, so you get that enjoyable factor, but you also you can enjoy it for longer. And it's starting now. It's finally, it was lagers at first, and it was always, everybody always stereotypically was like, I want the lager or the pilsner, which is the same thing. Pilsner is a lager, but they basically want a beer that's light that they can drink. And a lot of people also, as well as I know you and your roommate, Michael, enjoy a beer and a whiskey, which is a very classic thing. You're not going to drink a 9% Imperial IPA like I am right now
with a whiskey,
unless you had a bad day at work and you want to feel horrible.
Hey man, sometimes shit happens.
Yeah. sometimes you're right. Sometimes shit does happen. So
the session beer started out with like lagers, pilsners, and now we're moving into like these like IPAs and different styles. I mean, was that something that was just like finding the technique to make these?
I think demand is there. I think people want it. I think people want to be able to drink and enjoy and not, you know, actually feel the effects as much. And I think that's what it really comes down to. And these big brewers are looking for new challenges. They've done many of styles. We were speaking earlier about German beer and how we mimic a lot of their Kolsch. We try to reproduce their Hefeweizens. We try to do all those things. But it's more, I think, market driven. I think the market wants it. I think people want to be able to drink it and enjoy it, and it goes back to what we were talking about with beer cocktails earlier.
Sessionable
cocktails. Like you want to have a cocktail. You want to have, you know, you, how do you feel after three martinis? How would you feel, you know? And then how would you feel if you had three beer cocktails, three micheladas, you know, per se? Like
yeah, before.
You can enjoy those. You can still be social.
Right.
You can still go home and get up for work the next day.
Well, something that I think about as a bartender is like there's kind of like, and this is a really bad like way of thinking, I think, is like as a customer and as a bartender, but I feel like a lot of times like the added value to a cocktail is the ABV, which isn't entirely true. You know, it's because like we're saying, you know, to have like a beer cocktail or even like something that's like vermouth based,
no,
you don't want your customer thinking that you're trying to like cheat them out of booze by like using lower ABV products. You're just like, you're trying to encourage a good, like, extended stay and extended time, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the cool thing about session beers.
You know? you get those drinkers, you know, when they come in the bar, and you know who they are.
Yeah.
And they're like, which beer has the most alcohol?
It's usually me and Mike.
Yeah, exactly. It's a rough day at work. You come see me, you know, I'm not going to be mad about that. But, you know, there are those people that, you know, shop for it in that sense, and that they look for that. But then there's also those people that don't. And, with added value, it doesn't mean that it has to be strong. If it's made with very, very well ingredients, if it's balanced right, and it's, you know, that's really what it's about for me. You know, like, and obviously I'm on the bartending end, so I don't pay for drinks as often as most other people do. But I also like to fully enjoy what I'm drinking. I don't get myself belligerent.
Yeah.
You know, I want to fully enjoy, like, you know, that cocktail, you know.
Yeah. I do remember the first time I saw on a beer menu, and I remember like actually the first, it was probably like right around the first time that I ever, one of the first times I ever saw the ABV listed next to the beers on a menu, probably like 8 years ago or so. And everyone started doing that, which is great. That way you don't have to like be shocked when you're like stumbling out of the room, you know?
Yeah.
But I remember seeing like Anchor's Old Foghorn
at
10% ABV. I was sweet, I'm going to get that one.
Yeah.
But I was also like a punk rock kid with no money. So I was like, I'm going to get the most bang for my buck.
Yeah.
But nowadays, I'm like totally like, all right, I'm too old for this shit.
How much are the Boilermakers?
Exactly. But now, like, I mean, even Guinness, though, Guinness is low ABV.
Wait, they're 3.8%. I mean, they're under 4%.
So it's like kind of the original session beer.
Yeah, I mean, yes. That's the funny thing, too, is like People look at stout and they look at dark malt beers, and for some reason they think they have way more calories, more alcohol.
Because they look evil.
And they look, and it's just because they're dark, and you think that that liquid somehow holds up, it doesn't get broken down by the acids in your stomach, but it doesn't get digested. But it's really actually very light and very satisfying, and you can drink a six pack of it, and you know you'll have a small buzz. You know, I mean, depending, like me and you, we
can hold our own.
Yeah, yeah. So
we're pros.
But you know, you can. It's thoroughly enjoyable. It's a great style, and it's not. You know, and it has less alcohol than that Pilsner you were drinking that you thought was light. You know,
right, exactly.
Just before that.
Another thing. Going back to the whole beer cocktail thing too. It's like you know, we talk about like micheladas, and even like there's a cocktail I love called the Chevelle, which is basically like a half size whiskey sour that's topped with Pilsner. Yep. It's great. It's super refreshing, super summery. But then like you think about like the original like. Even more original beer cocktails of actually mixing beers like the Black and Tan and the Half and Half. You were telling me that there are places now that are taking that to like a further, like kind of higher level.
I mean, it's you know, like you said, the micheladas are like taking one style of beer and then adding something to it. But then to take a few different actual beers or brews, like a cider and a few other things, into it, to make them work together is actually not that easy. And that's why you don't see it as often. And it's kind of a new, like we were saying, it's a new
beer cocktails, in general, if you're mixing with booze, like hard alcohol.
It's the new frontier of cocktails. Like it's very challenging.
Yeah, there's no guidelines historically to like tell you that these formulas work together.
Yeah, yes, exactly. So I have a friend that works at the Blind Tiger in the city. Mm-hmm. Amazing draft bar. I mean, everybody knows it. If you know beer, that's the place to go. They get all the real hard to get stuff, you know, mm-hmm. all the real good stuff.
The good shit.
Yeah, all the good shit's there. But he, this guy Luke, a really great bartender, amazing guy. Go, if you ever go in there and he's there, Tom, you know me, and he'll charge you double. But he makes his drink, and it's basically a Belgian strong ale, a cider, and a little bit of a Grand Cru Flemish Red. And it's three different beers. I mean, it's a 4-ounce drink, so it's kind of like a shooter. It could be served a little bit larger, I think. But it's basically three different beers blended. And it's pretty intriguing because it opens my eyes. It was like, you know what? I haven't tried enough. There's more out there. Like there is going to be, you know, in the future, there's going to be a huge market for this. And there's nobody really doing it, and it's kind of inspiring. I mean, to be able to take all those contrasting flavors and make them work together, you know, and to be palatable and enjoyable is a feat in itself. And
well, yeah, I mean, like, even just there's just crazy amounts of different brews out there these days. I mean, we're really lucky to be living in this time where we can, like, really, like, pinpoint, like, the styles we like for, like, even, like, food pairings and things like that, you know. Hell, even in the cider category, there's so many, which we're going to get to a little bit later. We've got a big frosty bottle here staring me in the face. But,
oh, my gosh, I can't get through this IPA. It's so good. But I still have that whole 750 of cider to drink.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a really dark day.
How long are we on the air for again?
We got about 20 more minutes.
Okay, we'll be fine. We might need two more bottles of that.
But, yeah, I mean, like, you know, even mixing, like, beer and cocktails, you know, that's one thing. You know, even like, you know, I remember like when I first started bartending, the first bar that I worked at, we would always float Guinness on top of our Bloody Marys, you know, like, and I know that's kind of a little regional thing.
Oh, yeah. Well.
But yeah, I mean, like, that's kind of like the easy way out. Like this whole, like, I had never really heard of anyone like mixing a bunch of different beers together until you told me that earlier. But then I started thinking about like, you know, like peach lambics and like mead and like thinking of all these things that you could do in like a bar that doesn't necessarily have like a full liquor license. Yeah. You know, there's so many like challenging obstacles. Like, first of all, because it's hard to mix with. That's why no one ever does it.
Yeah, that's why.
But
just
when you
see
find
it,
when you find that balance and those flavors that go together, it's pretty magical, man.
Well, it's like, imagine like 30 years from now when somebody's like, yeah, off the classic beer cocktail list, you know, like the like, oh wow, like really these are the staples of, these are the regional staples of classic beer cocktails.
That's awesome.
Mean, it's gonna happen. It's bound to happen. American beer has come so far in the last 10 to 15 years. Especially, I mean, the East Coast is finally catching up with the West Coast. I mean, they've been doing it for way longer than we have. But it's really exciting. It's really big, and people need to be challenged. And people, you know, as you know, in the restaurant industry, they always customers always looking for something that they haven't had, and that's something that I think will, you know, obviously easily draw a lot of interest.
Yeah,
you know, It's going to be huge. It just, again, though, there's a challenge. I mean, you know, one day you could possibly have a beer cocktail named after you. That's how far we're just not there yet. You know,
dude,
you could be the Damon, you know, Shotsky or something. You figure something out.
You know, I believe it already exists.
Yeah,
I think it's in the Heritage Radio cocktail book.
Is it?
It might be. Jack's probably writing that right now. I think Jack's been like writing down a bunch of these ideas, and he's gonna like totally snake me on this book.
Does Jack have a liquor license?
He's saying no, but with his head. But I think his heart's saying yes.
Okay, just let him know I'm trying to open a bar in 6 months,
dude. Well, shit, we're already halfway through the show, so let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll talk more about beer with Tristan. All right, back in just a moment.
You're listening to Never in Love by Four Lincolns on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte. We have Tristan Colgrove from Bush & Shank and Mini Bar in lovely Brooklyn, New York. And we're about to... We were just talking before the break about mixing different beers and different fermentables, fermented drinks, as opposed to, like, you know, with cocktails, mixing, like, hard alcohols and bitters and all these things. Even though I was telling you before the show, I do... Sometimes I have to forego the soda in my bitters and soda and use a little Pilsner. It's pretty sweet hair of the dog.
I really got to try that out.
It's really good. Okay. It's really good. I know, like, out here they also do a little bit of that, but it's usually, like, on ice. And I think the ice gets in the way. If you're hungover, man, you just got to go straight for it.
Yeah, you see these TV shows, and these guys just take a... And they're like, oh, yeah, this is our cure in Louisiana for hangover. And they basically make an omelet without cooking it and put, like, tomato juice in it. You know, and then you get... And then, you know, we're just a little more sophisticated here. Pilsner, a couple dashes of Angostura.
Yeah.
This is just keep it clean and simple, guys.
Totally.
All right.
Even, like... Man, you know, there's the classic Americano cocktail, which is Campari, sweet vermouth, and seltzer. Yeah. I like to do it. I call it the Americano Perfecto,
yeah.
Which is instead of Pilsner, I use Pilsner. So it's nice. Campari, sweet vermouth, and Pilsner. It's actually really, really good. It sounds kind of disgusting now that I'm saying it out loud, but it is really good.
Pilsner's pretty versatile too. I mean, how many cocktails do you top with Prosecco? How many, you know?
Exactly.
And the light flavor really works. Because it's not, you can't do it with an IPA. You can't do it with that porter you're drinking right now.
Nope.
But the cleanliness of that style works well with blending with other things.
Mm-hmm.
Some, like the challenges we were talking before about beer cocktails, that's kind of one of the hardest parts is getting over that.
Yeah.
And then there's other, you know, right now we're about to try this.
Well, yeah, exactly.
The Sarasola cider.
Yeah. Sarasola cider. It's a Basque Spanish cider. And, you know, like you were saying, like using that light, refreshing kind of like Pilsner quality in a cocktail. And then you could even use something like a cider. And cider's like really blown up over the last few years. And it was kind of like one of those things that, like, I know that you and I probably growing up, it was one of those things that was like, what the hell is this?
It was like Cider Jack. It was, I mean, cider when I was growing up. It was like woodchuck, woodpecker, cider jack, which was like flavored like raspberry, whatever cider.
Yeah.
And it was more of a market that was driven to people that were, I think it was the malt push and the people that were not beer, that weren't beer drinkers and they were trying to appeal to it. But cider has its own thing. It has its own place. Some ciders you can even compare to wine. Like, they're at such a mm-hmm. level. From like even this that we're drinking right now, the carbonation is really low, the acidity is really high. It's kind of
very vinegary.
It's almost like very vinegary, almost like a sour beer, and very enjoyable. It's not the cider that we saw when we were 21 years of age, and you know, when we were kids. It's taken on a whole new form. I mean, these ciders we're getting, we get French ciders, we get
even the stuff Spanish from upstate, cider. Like maybe, dock cider.
Oh, yeah.
It's like
dock cider is made at a vineyard. Like, it's at such a high level now. And going back to the beer cocktail thing, cider is one of the key elements in one of my friend's cocktails. And it's very versatile. The flavor can be blended, you know, very easily with other things, just like the Pilsner, per se. Mm-hmm. And look to, actually, in the next couple of weeks for us to start making something like that, because it just came to me right now.
Yeah.
I'm like, bitters and cider.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's happened.
Yeah. This.
You can put bitters in it.
This might be the seasonal hangover drink.
Yeah.
You know, we might go from Pilsner to cider in the spring.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even this one kind of drinks more like it's almost like a beer cocktail in itself. You know,
yeah.
It's like, because I use a lot of vinegars in cocktails.
Yeah.
You know, this definitely has that. Also, like, I don't. There's even with like. Like you're saying with the cider market, a lot of people are doing like Hans Riesebauer, the guy who makes all the Austrian schnapps and like blue gin. He started making an apple cider, like a hard cider recently. It's really great, but it's also like really low, like it's really tiny, like Méthode Champenois, like tiny bubble, you know, very like crisp and like drinks like a wine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're really, to tell you the truth, most normal people, if you didn't show them the bottle and you poured this out for them, they might think of that it was a wine versus a cider. It's you know, especially with that vinegar flavor and that acidity, you're almost drinking. I mean, even like some of the beer these days, like Evil Twin does a Symphony 9, and I swear to God, I'm drinking wine. And it's a great beer, but I swear to God, I'm drinking wine. Like, you wouldn't actually know if I put this in front of the people sitting at the table eating that delicious pizza right now. you wouldn't know. This market is blown up in front of people. There hasn't been a ton of talk about it, but it's there and it's evident. And you know,
yeah, it feels like right now it's kind of like a like industry / insider kind of drink.
Well, it's also what, you know, me and you, if we get hammered for like a whole weekend and we went to a wedding like I did this past weekend, I really just want to drink cider because that's what I drink when I'm not drinking.
It reminds me of like drinking, kind of like I'm drinking juice when I was sick.
when I was in Philadelphia this past weekend, and I had a Commonwealth cider, and it was made with lemongrass and ginger. And I got to tell you, when I drank it, it tasted nothing like a cider. It tasted like a light, almost Arnold Palmer with ginger.
Oh, wow.
Literally, there was like almost zero carbonation. I had it on ice. I usually drink my cider on ice, depending.
Yeah.
This definitely not, but I usually drink it on ice, and it was. I drank 5 or 6 pints of it. No lie, it was low. It was 4%, and I felt great. And it was very. It was in my social, you know, social gathering. I had all my friends around me from Philly, and I was drinking hard the last few days going to wedding. You know how that is, and working Friday nights in Brooklyn. You know how that is, it was really good. It was really, really refreshing and satisfying. So they're doing some really cool things with it.
Yeah.
If I would have given it, you would not know there was alcohol in it.
Yeah.
That's even crazier.
And I feel like, especially with the cider category, like, since it's branching out so much, it's like, it's finally starting to get away from that, like, stereotypical, like Jolly Rancher, like, carbonated Jolly Rancher, like, green apple kind of thing, you know?
Yeah,
because this is way more sophisticated than
I
ever probably would have thought that, you know, cider would be.
You know, I think people are starting to, like, the general public are starting to warm up to it. Obviously, I mean, there's a bigger demand for it, but it's not what you would think. You know, it's completely the opposite of what you would think. It's not Smirnoff raspberry ice. Like it was kind of portrayed when I was younger. If you remember, like the hard cider, what was it? The Cider Jack.
Mm-hmm.
They made cider in like 3 different flavors, but they also made like Smirnoff ice at the same time. So,
do people still ice each other?
Not that I know of. I did have a job in Midtown where they were icing people. They're a bunch of bros from Cornell. and I know it started originally in the South, so it'd probably be actually more of your thing than mine.
I mean, I know, but like there have been times like when, like Julian Brizzi, the guy that owns Rucola, when he was one of my bartenders, I remember the last night that he was, he used to always ice people. He used to go down to the bodega, get a six pack of Smirnoff Ice, and like he just like randomly ice people. But he got iced so hard on his last day there.
That's what you get, though. I mean, if you want to give me a stomachache, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get that stomachache back when you're trying to enjoy yourself. Yeah. It's going to be at the worst possible time.
It's always bad.
You won't see it coming.
It's never a good time.
Yeah. Yeah, again, it's something I actually I haven't seen anybody ice anyone in a very long time.
We got to bring that back. Yeah, it's a good one.
You know what? Let's talk to the guys at Las Americas and
yeah, exactly.
You know, either that or I'll pull a case if you want. We will just split it. You know,
dude,
split the cost and just ruin people's days.
I remember when Four Loko got in trouble. We bought a bunch of cases and just like had it stored. That was a really weird Christmas party.
Four Locos is like Twinkies, man. Like if you got that old stuff, it's good forever, man. There's so much alcohol in that malt.
Oh man,
and so much Red Bull or Taurine or whatever they put in there.
I tried making some. I used one of the watermelon ones to try to make.
You made a cocktail.
Tried to, man.
Did you try to make a cocktail?
It was some sort of like margarita watermelon thing, and it was disgusting. But I made. It was also someone who was leaving. Yeah. It was their last day, and I made it for him. Yeah, I haven't seen that person since. I hope they're still alive. Yeah. That was mean.
Oh my God.
That was a really mean thing to do.
Four Locos cocktails. Oh my gosh.
I don't know if we could ever like cider someone with this Sarasota, man.
No. They'd be like, would probably be like, well, that's really nice of you.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
thank you very much.
I have to chug the 750 now.
Imagine that on one knee.
Oh, man. You better watch out, Jack.
Yeah.
We're coming for you.
We're coming for you.
Hey, by the way, if Smirnoff is listening, we'll gladly accept a sponsorship for the speakeasy.
See, we haven't said anything bad. We're actually promoting them.
We're promoting them.
Yeah, exactly. Between them and Guinness right now.
Yeah. Hey, we've got the whole fiscal year taken care of. I was sitting here thinking about like the whole bitters and cider thing. Jack, why don't we have a bottle of bitters? Like, we should have at least one bottle of bitters in the studio.
It's a great question.
Yeah, we gotta figure that out. We're gonna talk after the show. God damn it!
I'm coming back next week, whether I'm a guest or not.
With Smirnoff Ice and bitters,
you're damn right.
Awesome. Okay, so like being that we were talking about cider, and you know, to me, like it's always like a very fall kind of. It is. I mean, the flavors are very fall anyway. Yeah. But I tend to like drink it throughout the winter and summer, though. I mean, like it's one of those crisp things that you could always have.
Yeah.
But like that being said, what are some of your favorite like seasonal brews that you like to have?
The summer, especially with American craft beer now coming out, that you don't know what they're going to release, and you don't know what we're actually going to be able to get a hold of. New York's like such a big market. We have all these breweries available to us, but we only have so many of their brews. It's all beer is all supply and demand. But for the summer or the spring, you're definitely going to see, I mean, obviously one of the biggest hits in the last 2 years, farmhouse style, like Saison. Mm-hmm. Saison is huge. And everybody's making a Saison. So you should see that definitely through the springtime. All the local brewers are making it. Everybody's making a Saison. You have the guys from Maryland, Stillwater. They make exceptional farmhouse ales. That's basically all they make. But they do it very, very well. You know,
nice.
There's another Schneider's putting out a beer we were speaking earlier about. Schneider is all... It's from Germany. They specialize in wheat beer. They have this new hybrid hop. They're the only people that have it because they bought the whole crop. They're following, and you know, German purity laws. They're snob. They're very tough about what you can use and whatever. So they're going to be putting out this beer called Schneider Summer, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. And the hybrid hop that they're using actually will have a stronger hop flavor than most normal germ beers have, because Americans love overhopped beer.
That's true.
And we want those hops to be pronounced. You know, we're not looking for the subtlety of you rounding the beer out. We want it to overtake the beer a little bit.
We want our beer to smell like Humboldt County.
Yeah, we want our beer to smell like Humboldt County and taste like grapefruit. I mean, at the end of the day, or most other citrus that you get out of it. But the Saison push actually kind of baffle me a little bit, because you have this beer that is a farmhouse sales originally created by people that were poor,
right?
Farmers that made this beer for them, and it was a peasant beer. It was by any means. There's nothing royal about it.
But that's like the coolest thing about that. That's how like most of the stuff that we like came out that way. Cheese and charcuterie, bread, pasta. Like these are like it's all like peasant food, really.
Yeah, I mean, like I'm from Jersey. We love pork roll. I mean, I'm a total pork loving peasant. And if you can take everything, cut a pig, completely chop it up, add some extra fat and salt to it, and some nitrates or whatever else you want in there, and fry it, I'll eat it.
I think you're not alone with that one. Man. But okay, so like actually we're almost out of time. But tell me real quick what's like one of the weirdest beers you've ever had?
The really weird ones really these days are. Basically anything that's been aged in like I'm starting to taste a lot of things that are put in different wine casks, different Calvados, even bourbon casks a lot are being used now. Obviously everybody knows about all the bourbon county stout from Goose Island and all the other things like that, but the wine casks are really doing some weird things. They're doing some really cool stuff with it, and going back to how all these beer, all these different fermented things are starting to taste like wine, it's kind of funny because that's really in essence what it is. I mean, and they're serving it in a 6 ounce, which is a huge, it's a big wine pour, actually.
Yeah.
You know, people are like, that's a tiny beer pour, but it's a huge wine pour. I mean, you're drinking wine, essentially. You know, the sour beer, really, especially a lambic that doesn't have a fruit in it, that's going to be probably the more trendy, I think, in the next coming years. It's got a really funky taste to it. And there's something appealing about it. It's just I don't know what it is. And most of them obviously are been made forever in Belgium. You know, they're you know, it's nothing new. It's new to us.
Right.
It's not new to them. But they're really really funky and really like. We drink a lot. We taste a lot. In our industry, we're constantly tasting, well, this is a good beer, this is a good beer, this is a good beer. But the things that really catch us are the things that we can't explain. And lambics for me, I'm not a brewer. I'm just too lazy. I just enjoy the fruits of other people's work. But the lambics and even some of the barrel-aged Flemish reds, like the Grand Crus that are in oak barrels, are pretty cool. I mean, there's if you ever tasted a Flemish red beer, depending on who it's from, if it's from Bocker, maybe a little more cherry, and then from obviously Rodenbacher and Crew, which is like the heavyweight champion, right. Like everybody, and it's the Grand Cru of Grand Crus. It's a lot of acidity. There's a lot of cool things going on that is not beer.
Yeah.
Whatsoever. And those are the things that really spark my interest, and I think along with a lot of everybody else. Yeah. There's kind of a mystery behind it. You're taking a beer and then you're putting in a barrel with some bacteria and you're going to let it sit for 2 years. And then you're going to build another beer that's new and then you're going to blend them together.
Yeah.
So you're going to take this old beer that you didn't drink from a party, like in that keg you didn't return because you're too lazy, that's sitting in the garage.
I've got a couple of those.
We don't have garages in Brooklyn. and you can hear it splashing around and you're like, that's 2 years old.
It's called my night. My end table.
By the way, we are not telling you to drink it by any means. Do not drink that beer. But in essence, that's what it is. Old beer.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are so many cool styles. Thank you for telling us about a lot of these coming out. It's to me a really cool like I always say on the show, it's a really cool time to be able to imbibe these great things that we're having, great cocktails and spirits and wines, and especially beer. And one of my favorite things about beer in general, when you're doing tastings, is that as opposed to wine or spirits, where you're supposed to typically you taste it but you spit.
Yeah.
With beer, you got to drink it. You got to swallow it.
Well, that's the joy of beer. With the low alcohol, the super low alcohol you get mostly in most beers. Yeah. I'm gonna drink it.
Yeah, exactly.
The tasting. I'm.
Somebody worked hard on this.
Yeah. If you go to wine tasting, you're gonna taste 100 wines. You're gonna spit it out. But yeah, somebody really worked hard for this one. The few beers. When a beer salesman come by, how many beers do you taste? Two, three.
If you go to a beer tasting, taste 100 beers. I just call that a
That's a
Wednesday
good,
afternoon at Heritage Radio.
Yeah, basically, I would say it's hanging out with my friend Damon, doing a radio show, and having to take a taxi home.
Well, on that note, I think we're going to have to talk about Hangover Cures next week. Tristan, thanks so much for coming on the show today. And thanks for listening to Heritage Radio. This has been The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte. See you next week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.